Welcome into a fresh episode of Fireside Sports presented by Oregon Sports News. I'm your host, Casey Mabbitt. Welcome to a wild week in the off season of, everything. It's going to be a lot of fun, but it's also going to be a lot of what in the world is going on, and we're here to guide you through that. These are the dog days of summer. It's officially August now. We're not really sure what's going to happen. We're not really sure if we care or if we want to pay attention. There's a lot of stuff going on. There's the wild card race in baseball. There's the playoff race in the MLS. And that's really it. I mean, I would love to go further along in that list, but right now we're waiting for a training camp to end in the NFL and preseason to start. The NBA doesn't matter yet. It matters in our hearts and in our minds, but as far as, like, there's no real anything going on right now. They're preparing for the NBA Africa game, which is a really big deal, but nothing regular season-wise there that you can even sniff right now. So I want to bring in a very special co-host, and we're only on the air this week, probably off the air this week, so hope you guys get your fill this week. His name is Bryant Knox, the Bryant Knox on Twitter. Make sure you follow him if you haven't already. He's in remote location this week. Bryant, where are you located tonight, and how are you doing?
I'm great, Casey. I am broadcasting live from the Pizza Pizza here in Beaverton across from Sunset High School, my alma mater. Thank you very much. I will... Yes. We got to throw in the Ohio State, the Sunset High School. You know, they're clearly on the same level.
Go Apollos.
Go Apollos, man. It's great to be here.
Yeah. Well, happy to have you. You've been surviving the heat. You haven't melted into human crazy glue yet, because I think the last time we talked, we joked about you being a ghost, and now you might be dying of heat stroke. I'm not sure what's going to be next. We might have to talk to our guy Gene and see if we're doing things on the level and appropriate. But how have you been feeling? You surviving the heat?
Barely.
That's all of us. He speaks for everyone.
The older I get, the less tolerance I have toward the heat, man. When I was a kid, I could run around for days, no shoes on, run around. My grandparents lived in Grants Pass, so I would have all sorts of hot summer stories. It was great out by the river. Nowadays, I just try and live inside with all my windows shut and the blinds closed. And,
were you living in a van down by the river?
No, but I was basically living on a boat by the river.
And
it was fantastic times. And nowadays, like, if it hits 86 degrees, I swear to God, I get sick. And yep. I'm not good with that anymore.
We're not made for this. We're from Portland, Oregon. We do not know what heat is. We don't know what to do with it.
I don't know what to do with it. So if anybody out there has tips, I'm willing to listen.
Well, speaking of hot takes, nice segue there, by the way. Speaking of hot takes, Kawhi Leonard to the Toronto Raptors. Your hot take, sir. Does this actually help Portland?
Well, I don't think it necessarily helps Portland. I think that the Spurs are going to be better than last year because they have a very, very solid player in DeMar DeRozan coming their way. I think that it hurts. Well,
let me rephrase. Let me rephrase before you get too deep. Is this the best trade partner Portland could have hoped for? If Kawhi had to go somewhere other than Portland and other than staying in San Antonio, is this the best case scenario?
Basically, because it came down to, really, in most minds, is he going to go to Philly or is he going to go to LA? And LA would have just been terrible for Portland and anybody in the West. Nobody wants to see LeBron and Kawhi together, which we may still end up seeing next offseason. You know, we don't know.
Right.
But basically, it came down to LA or Philly. And Philly would have also been terrible for any team with championship hopes, because that would have been hands down the best team in the East, even ahead of Boston. You know, quote me or don't at me or whatever the kids say these days. But yeah, going to Toronto was a move that I think anybody could look at and say, yeah, Toronto's dangerous now, but it doesn't really impact anybody out West beyond maybe Golden State.
So then what does this do for San Antonio as far as they get rid of Kawhi, who's one of the best players in the league and definitely arguably the best player, two-way player in the league? You get rid of him, you get DeMar DeRozan, who's a gifted scorer, but he doesn't give you much else, and he has had some injury problems in the last couple of years. Is that a fair 1-1 trade? I mean, did they get enough with their other assets that you could say this is a fair deal, or is this just San Antonio took the best offer on the table and this was it at the time?
Definitely the latter. I think that as far as market value goes, you could have gotten a lot more from Kawhi, but there was nothing else on the table. Toronto was the only team willing to offer a semi-star. You know, Neil O'Shea called Greg Popovich or R.C. Buford or whoever he called and said, you can have anybody on my roster not named Damian Lillard, C.J. McCollum, or Yusuf Nurkic. And that person, whoever was on the other end, probably laughed and hung up the phone within seconds.
Like, we don't want those people either, Neil.
And I think that the truth is that's basically what everybody was doing, assuming San Antonio had no leverage in the conversation. But Toronto came out there and said, you know what? We are legitimately looking to make a change. We already fired our coach of the year head coach. We are trying to get a player in here, and we're willing to shell out somebody who falls into that semi-star status. And so, yeah, I think San Antonio actually got a good deal out of it. I'm not saying it was the deal they necessarily wanted or a year ago they would have accepted, but in real time, yeah, it was the best deal, and they got a decent swap out of it.
Well, they knew that Kawhi was most likely going to walk next summer, if not sooner. It was unlikely they were going to get a better trade partner at the trade deadline. This gets them assets and a young star they can build around for the future. They still have LaMarcus Aldridge. They still have Pau Gasol. They still have Patty Mills. They still have a lot of really good, talented players. I think this was a smart move, but it seems a lot like what Indiana did last summer in getting rid of Paul George. It just smacks of desperation, and I think that's exactly what it was. You're right on the money there. It's just, is this going to really look like a quality team in the coming years, or is this going to be the year where they look back and go, that's when it all fell apart? That was the official moment the Popovich era ended.
Well, actually, I agree with you, and I do think that it is the moment that the Spurs era officially died. I think that we've been building up to this for quite a while, but you got to remember Tony Parker left the team
right. Literally
weeks before in free agency for Charlotte, which is super bizarre. But I think that that is definitely the moment that the Spurs, as we know them, kind of dissipated. But hear me out on this. You know, you can call the move for Toronto a desperation move all you want. And yeah, you can point to saying, yeah, it's kind of like a Paul George move. But the Paul George move for OKC actually worked out. They brought him into a small market. They paired him up with a superstar point guard. And wouldn't you know it, he re-signed with them after years of hearing he wanted to go to the LA Lakers. And so I think that Toronto is actually really banking on the fact that they can sell Kawhi. And, you know, power to them. I appreciate a team going out and taking a chance, and that's exactly what Toronto did.
Well, and Kyle Lowry, correct me if I'm wrong, but Kyle Lowry is the face of that franchise at the moment. And they have Serge Ibaka. They have some other talent around him. They have Johan Valenciunas, or however you pronounce his last name. They've got some other players. So they don't necessarily need him to be the guy like he was in San Antonio. This isn't LaMarcus Aldridge in a collection of garbage like they have currently. This is a pretty talented up-and-coming roster that, if LeBron's not in the East, they're probably fighting Boston and Philadelphia for the number one seed every year. You give up DeRozan, you get Kawhi Leonard. To me, Toronto takes a step forward. I think they should still bring Dwayne Casey back, but that's my humble opinion. Whereas San Antonio takes a step backward in all this. Is that your take on it as well, or do you see it differently?
No, I completely agree. And I think that Toronto has some nice role players, whereas San Antonio is starting to realize these role players probably aren't sort of the next heirs to all of these people who are leaving. Now, in San Antonio's defense, I actually do like DeJounte Murray as a nice new point guard. Patty Mills has always been a reliable player since he left Portland, actually, which just makes too much sense.
Right. Well, and that's all they were going to get, is he's reliable, but then you need more than that if you're building around.
Exactly, and so I think, you know, here's what we have to remember. San Antonio last year was almost a 50-win team.
Right.
And that was with Kawhi Leonard playing 9 games. So I do think San Antonio gets better in the short term, but I think that we're going to very quickly realize that they are not a team we can rely on as a perennial contender. Whereas Toronto – out in the East without LeBron James. Let's even get one step ahead here and talk about the rumors that maybe Kyrie Irving might want to leave Boston. Like we can look at the East as a jumbled mess, but that actually benefits Toronto. And I think that taking on Kawhi is the perfect gamble for them, because if they can convince him that a nice big city with a lot going on, sure, it's a little colder than LA, but if there's some things going on there and he can contend for a number one spot in the conference year after year, they're taking a great gamble, and I'm all for it.
Well, imagine, if you will, that they get to the Eastern Conference playoffs as, let's say, the 3 seed, as an example, and they play Philadelphia, who's number one, and he shuts down Ben Simmons, and they take the series. Then they go on and play Boston in the conference finals, and he shuts down Jason Tatum, and they take the series. And then they go and play Golden State in the finals, and they lose in 7 games, but he handles Kevin Durant for all 7 games, and he's in the argument for MVP. I think that's a good case for Toronto to say, you belong here. We've got the pieces. We just need another shot at them next year. Maybe he doesn't sign a multi-year deal. Maybe he signs like a 2-year deal with a player option. That could work for everybody, and it also gives him a chance to prove that he's better than the franchises he's playing for.
Yeah, that's a great situation for him. The catch, I really truly believe, is going to be what do the Lakers do this year?
Right.
Are the Lakers a 6th or 7th seed that maybe is not that enticing to somebody trying to compete right away against the Warriors? Or do the Lakers somehow pull us together to become a 3 or 4 seed and say, hey, we are literally one piece away, and Kawhi, you are that one piece?
So we'll see how that plays out, but I really am excited for what Toronto's going to have next year. I think it'll be an addition by subtraction kind of moment, and it helps out Portland in that they don't have to play Kawhi in the same conference if he is back and healthy. It didn't help any of the teams that they're competing against, so I'm okay with the trade. If he had to go somewhere, I'd rather he went somewhere in the deep north that somehow counts as the East Coast, but we'll keep a close eye on that one and see how it plays out. Speaking of things that played out in Portland's favor, or did it, the trade exception that the team had for the Allen Crabbe trade they performed last year, they ended up not doing anything with that. Is that something that you think was by design, or was there not enough partners out there, or any partners out there? Or is Olshay blowing smoke in the wind again? What do you make of this?
Yeah, I just have such a hard time, honestly, believing anything that Neil Olshay says at this point, because, to be completely honest, you know, we're talking about the trade exception that he threw out there as such a valuable piece, and then it
this
went
is why
to
we
waste.
Didn't go after the big free agents or the big draft picks. That's what he said.
Exactly, and I, you know, if it had just been this, that wouldn't be that big of an issue. But the fact is, going into free agency, he said that he wants players who are going to contribute in the playoffs. Right? Those are his own words. He said, we're going to focus on playoff-oriented players, because that was the right thing to say after a terrible postseason. And yet, you know who he signed? He signed Seth Curry and Nick Stauskas.
Remind me of their playoff experience again.
Yeah, exactly.
It's none, right? That's the stat. It's
literally
zero. Okay, got it.
Yep. Continue. And we're talking about dudes who are, you know, Nick Stauskas may have actually been on the roster for the Sixers. I actually can't remember, but if that's our breaking point, we're like, oh, was he on the roster or was he not? Yeah, that's not a good thing.
DNP coach's decision is not the kind of playoff experience I'm looking for. I hope you're not either.
Exactly.
But he's the sauce man, so we'll take it with what we can, you know? He's the sauce.
Oh, trust me, I'm super stoked about having a dude on the roster whose nickname is Sauce Castillo. I think that's great.
It's very good. It makes us all want more hot sauce.
As far as Olshay's promise to bring on playoff veterans and dudes who are going to contribute in the playoffs, that was a swing and a miss. And then just to follow that up with the trade exception completely expiring, that's literally 2 strikes. Like, I don't understand when or what his third strike is going to be, but it seems like he's had a lot of 1-2 strikes at this point.
So he lets Ed Davis walk for what amounts to $150,000 when you add up what he ended up getting paid in Brooklyn versus what Olshay ended up paying Seth Curry and Saskas. You combine for, I believe, 4.25. He lets Ed Davis walk for 4.4. Okay, we'll take that on the chin. Moving on, Boogie Cousins signs with the Warriors after there was apparently a deal in place to send Zach Collins, who we think is our unicorn, to New Orleans in exchange for Boogie Cousins, who is not a unicorn. And the reason that he let Ed Davis walk is because he wanted more unicorns. What's your take on that, sir?
I mean, I'm all for more unicorns. You just got to go get them.
Right.
You can't talk about unicorns and not go get unicorns.
Who do you think has a better chance of being a unicorn, though? Zach Collins or DeMarcus Cousins?
You know, Boogie was sort of a unicorn in training.
Right.
He had a developing three-point shot. He could bring up the ball up the court without dribbling it off his foot, a la Raymond Felton. So he was already a step ahead of Raymond Felton, so right. I was good with that. I liked him in the pick and roll and the pick and fade. I thought those were two very nice things for Boogie. But at this point, you know, there's a reason he needed to sign a $5 million contract with a true championship contender, and it's because nobody out there really believes that a dude his size is going to come back from the quote-unquote death sentence of NBA injuries. And so if we're talking about who's the better option for the future unicorn, you gotta go Zach Collins. And I'm not saying he's ever going to reach Boogie's popularity or even Boogie's all-star status or anything like that. But the fact is, he actually showed tangible improvement this last year, and that's 1 year removed from coming off the bench in college. Like, I really, really like what Zach Collins has to offer as far as the ceiling goes. So I like him as the better potential unicorn here.
I'll make the question even easier for you. If you could trade for pre-injury DeMarcus Cousins or present-day Mo Bamba, which one do you trade Zach Collins for? Or do you keep him either way?
Oh, man, that's making the question 10 times tougher.
Is it?
It is.
We know you love you some Mo Bamba, so what's the problem?
Well, because here's the thing. Because Boogie was tracking to easily be the best center in the league as far as offense goes. Now, I get that there are much better defensive centers out there.
He does get ejected a lot.
And he does get ejected a lot.
Hard to win from the locker room. Just saying.
I will say, if I'm, you know, gun to my head, I'm definitely taking Bamba because you know my bias.
I do.
I think that dude has a chance to be the best player actually from this draft, a draft that basically ignored him in favor of DeAndre Ayton, Luka Doncic, Trae Young, even Michael Porter, who slipped to 14 where Denver drafted him. He got much more publicity and attention.
Well, even Marvin Bagley got more attention.
Marvin Bagley especially got more attention. Unfortunately, it's because he was drafted to the Sacramento Kings, which does not end well for anybody.
Nope.
But you know, I think I said this before. I hate the fact that Bamba was drafted to Orlando because they just don't know how to develop their picks.
Nope.
And that's really frustrating for me. But I do like Bamba as a potential unicorn who can come out and actually develop his game early in his career and really, really establish himself. So pre-injury Boogie versus Bamba, man, that's super, super tough. But yeah, I like the potential that Bamba has on both ends of the court for sure.
It's hard to argue with a 7'10" wingspan. You know, I don't know that there is an argument there. So I think he would be for the future. He'd be the right pick because there's so much potential there. Whereas with Collins, there's a lot of potential. I think there's more with Bamba, and there's more long term potential for Bamba over Cousins. So, you know, it's a dealer's choice kind of moment. Everyone's going to have a differing opinion on it. That's fine. That's why we talk sports. But I think you and I agree that Bamba would be the way to go there. I would gamble on that if it were me. I don't think we're giving up the house here to do it. It's not like we've got a championship roster we're giving up.
No, for sure. And like I said in previous podcasts of yours,
ours,
my, you know,
we own it. Presented by Oregon Sports News.
You know, my dream scenario would obviously be to acquire the number one pick and take on DeAndre, and that's right. The clear number one pick. But to me, right after that, my dream scenario is to trade into the 4 or 5 spot where you know Bamba is still going to be available, but you don't have to give up as much to get that number 2 or number 3 spot.
Right.
And man, that would have just been incredible to add him to this core.
Yeah, it would have been really exciting. So speaking of that, going into the season, now that we know there are really no more moves to be made unless a big trade happens, which, good luck. Did Portland do enough? Is this a team that's going to be competitive next year and competitive in the playoffs, or is this another also-ran once the year's over? Or is it somewhere in between? It doesn't have to be black and white.
Yeah, I think it's two separate questions. Did they do enough? No, right. Definitely not.
They're not the Warriors.
But are they going to be competitive? Yes, I definitely think they are. I think that they'll be competitive as far as making the playoffs go. But, man, you have to consider the fact that so many teams got better either by virtue of trade, free agency, or health. And Portland got better by virtue of none of those.
Right.
And it's a really complicated conversation to have. But I think they're going to be competitive. They just didn't get better in that process.
Do you think – so I don't know if you heard C.J. McCollum's most recent podcast episode where he and Kevin Durant were kind of talking about where the Blazers stand in the Western Conference. Who do you side with there? Do you like C.J.'s optimism that they've got the guys and they just need to put it all together in 1 year? Or do you think Durant's got a more realistic take on it that Portland's not close?
Both. Of your questions, I say yes to. I love CJ's optimism because he said we got the team, we got right. The team. Anything can happen. We like Nurk. Like those are three really good things to say, and I'm all for him saying it.
And he's not wrong. He, you know, that could happen, but
yeah, he's not wrong at all. The catch is that KD, as pompous as we want to say he was, as arrogant and as patronizing as we want to say he was, that dude was also spitting some truth, right? He said, you don't have to worry about what's going on at the top. Like, that is the most patronizing thing you could ever say. Or not even patronizing. That's just, like, arrogant. It's rude. It's arrogant. But you know what? It's also the truth. And by the way, for any Blazers fan out there getting offended by that, he was not talking to CJ right there. He was talking to 27, 28 other teams in the league.
Right.
And, like, you cannot take offense to that as a Blazers fan. You have to listen to that and say, you know what? He's kind of right. Let's actually do something about it.
Yeah.
So here's a message to Neil Olshey. Do something about it.
I honestly hope that pissed off Neil Olshey, and he's going to do everything he can to effing shut up Kevin Durant over the next 3 years. I don't believe for a second that's what happens, but I do think Olshey's pissed about it. But I don't think it's going to turn into anything good for us.
No, because here's the thing. I think Olshey's going to actually sit down with CJ at some point and talk about this interaction and say, hey, CJ, first of all, you can't really put yourself in that position. But second of all, you know, what was your opinion of that conversation? And I think CJ's going to take the high road. He's going to say, you know what? KD and I, we chatted it out. We had a glass of red wine. We chilled. We're friends again. I think that it's going to be one of those situations where Neil Olshey is not going to feel any sort of pressure based on that. But I actually think he should. I think he should listen to that and say, you know what? CJ had him on his show, and Katie actually spoke some truth, and we should listen to that and do something about it.
Yeah, I mean, no one's going to say, hey, by the way, you guys are really good. They're going to say, you beat us. We'll talk.
Exactly.
And they're right. They should say that. I mean, what great dynasty wouldn't say that? They're going to say, you put it up on the scoreboard, we'll respect you. You let us sweep you every year, sorry. Doesn't mean we need to talk about you.
Exactly.
But, you know, the good news is KD likes us, so we got that going for us. You know, that's a championship in and of itself, so we'll move on. I don't know if you've been keeping track. We'll talk about this very quickly because this is a whole podcast in and of itself, but... have you realized, speaking of KD, it's been 10 years since he was drafted by the Sonics, and that was the last year the Sonics had a team 10 years ago? How does that feel as a Blazers fan? Do you miss having a rivalry up the I-5 corridor?
You know, I do miss it, but I admittedly, I'll show my age here in a I guess, youthful kind of way. I was born a little too late to really appreciate the I-5 rivalry. By the time I was paying attention to basketball, the I-5 rivalry wasn't as important as it had previously been. So for me, it's actually not as big of a deal. But you know what's really exciting for me? You may have seen this, is that Kevin Durant and the Warriors are actually going to play a preseason game against the Kings in Seattle at Key Arena this October. And I am going to do anything I can to get up there for that game, just because I appreciate basketball in Seattle. I think it needs to be back in Seattle. And I think that Kevin Durant, you know, even though he has been far removed from Seattle at this point in the Pacific Northwest, I think that that is a really, really great thing that he is coming back to play a game in Key Arena, because I fully believe that basketball will be back in Seattle at some point, but it'll be in a new arena, a modern arena, a much needed arena, if we're being honest. But to play a game in Key Arena is going to be really, really great. And I'm hoping to personally catch it in person if possible.
Well, and from what I understand, they're either underway with construction on renovating Key Arena, or they're already done, because the NHL is putting a team in Seattle in 2019, I believe, if not 2020. So you may actually see that stadium be state-of-the-art all over again and ready for an NBA team, and this could be the way they get it done, is look at that, how that game goes, and show that to prospective owners or venture capitalists and go, let's invest, let's get this team here. And the NBA will see this is a venue that deserves a fan base.
I'd love to see that. You know, based on the precedent of what's already happened, I'd be surprised if Seattle got a basketball team with that particular arena as their home court. I still think it takes a brand new arena to make it happen. But don't get me wrong, I'd love to see it happen. And I personally look forward to going up there at some point, whether it be for basketball or hockey or whatever, to see that arena renovated. Because, you know, let's just be real here. That arena needs some help.
It absolutely does. But we'll see how you think of it, or what you think of it when you see it in the fall. And we'll do an episode about that and how the experience went and how close you are to investing in the new team. Lastly, we're down to a couple minutes left, so we got to get out of here. But Brian, the Super Bowl is just around the corner. I don't know if you know this, but February just comes right after August. So I'd like you to tell me.
That's how it seems to work, isn't it?
Yeah, it really does. I mean, you blink and it's over. So it's about 5 weeks to go till the season starts, but February is right around the corner. We're talking Super Bowl already. We're ahead of the curve here. We don't wait for the Super Bowl to happen. We bring it to them. So what I'm going to do is I'll tell you who I think is going to be in the Super Bowl. You tell me if you agree with those picks, and then we're going to pick who's going to win the Super Bowl, and then we're going to sign off, because that's what you got to do. You drop the mic and you move on to the next episode. So for me, I'm going to say that in the AFC, we're going to see the Patriots back in the Super Bowl, just because I look at that collection over there, and I really like what a lot of other teams have done, but I don't see anybody who's ready to take them out. Even Jacksonville, I think they might actually take a step backwards this year. In the NFC, I'm calling for Minnesota to make it to the Super Bowl. I would love to see Green Bay go or Seattle go, but I don't think either of them have enough firepower on both sides to get there. And the Rams are going to be devastatingly good this year. And I think so are the Eagles, but I think out of all of those, Minnesota makes it. Do you like those picks? Do you have different picks?
So I actually love those picks, and I'm upset that I love those picks, because New England and Minnesota were actually my picks too. I think a healthy Dalvin Cook is just going to be
so good.
I think he's going to take over the league. I know that the league last year was all about Alvin Kamara, and this year there's such a good running back class. I think Saquon Barkley is going to be great if the Giants can figure out how to block him even once a game. I think that's going to be fantastic for them. So, you know, my gut picks really are actually New England and Minnesota as well. But I'll throw you for a loop here. I will make one bold call, which is, well, one and a half bold calls. One, I don't think the Rams are going to be as good as people think. I think they are a legitimate year away. And yep, we can go into that in a future podcast. I'm happy to do it, but I think they're going to be a year away, and I think that'll be exposed by midseason. But here's my actual bold call. I'm still picking Minnesota with a healthy Dalvin Cook to make the Super Bowl, but I'm picking the Jacksonville Jaguars over New England.
Oh.
I think that team just has all the momentum and all the swag. I think 2018 is going to be all about the swag, and I think they're going to bring it back in such a good way, and I am all about it.
I look forward to it, but I think if the Rams are taking a step back, the Jags are taking a bigger step back, but we'll see who's right. I don't know who that's going to be, but I'm actually going to pick the Vikings to win their first Super Bowl this year. So if you've got the Jags going over the Patriots, so you've got Jags in Minnesota in the Super Bowl, who are you picking to win that game?
Well, in that case, I'll definitely go Minnesota too.
All right.
I won't try to get too cute there. I will definitely pick a healthy Minnesota team for sure.
So there you have it. Minnesota gets to the Super Bowl and wins it the year after they could have hosted it. That's all we have for now. The NFL season's right around the corner. We can't wait. NBA is also right around the corner. Again, we can't wait. You know, soccer and baseball are great, but they only get you so far. You need some of the real sports around once in a while. So hope you guys have a fun summer. We'll take next week off, and we'll see you the week after. Stay cool out there if you can. And thanks for tuning in. This has been Fireside Sports, presented by Oregon Sports News. I'm Casey Mabbitt. He's Bryant Knox. Thanks for listening. Stay classy and stay cool, Portland.